Our message this morning, we're on week two of Love Is. Let's remember what Wednesday is. Okay. Good old Valentine's Day coming up, okay? And maybe most people don't talk about that in church, but any opportunity that we get to show love, I think is a great thing. I think it's something that is absolutely brilliant. And so be thinking about that. I'm not going to speak about Valentine's Day, but be thinking about that. If you have that special someone in your life, how can you show them love this week? Because we talked last week about the fact that love is a verb. It's a doing word. It's not something that is silent. It's something that is active. Okay, so I want to tell you a story that I heard this week, and all about a pastor who was doing a building project in his church. And I know what that is like, okay? And so he was doing this building project, and they were taking an offering for the building project. And in his church, he had these two brothers. Now, these two brothers were really rich, okay? And they could probably have single-handedly provided everything for the building project. But they were not very generous. And they were not very nice, apparently, either. So they were taking their offering, and in the middle of doing this building project, one of the brothers dies. It's a bit sad. Not very compassionate church really this morning, are we? Okay, one of the brothers dies, and the other brother, thank you. And the other brother goes to the pastor and said, oh, you know my brother's died. And the pastor said, yeah, we're really sorry for your loss. And he said, well, when you do the funeral, pastor, I would like you to tell the congregation that my brother was a saint. So the pastor looked at this man and he said, but he wasn't. He said, but I would like you to tell, you know, in honor of my brother, I would like you to tell the congregation that he was a saint, that he was brilliant, that, you know, he was like, you know, a great member to have in your church and all of that kind of stuff. And so the pastor said, let me think about that. So he went away and thought about it. And he came back to the brother and he said, and the brother said to him, if you say he's a saint, I will give into the building fund. So there's a bit of an incentive for the pastor. So the pastor comes back and he says to me, he said, listen, we need to get this phase of the work done really, really quickly. So will you give into the building fund before I say he's a saint? And if you give into the building fund, I'll say at the funeral that he is a saint. And so he says, yeah, okay, no problem. So he gives into the building fund. And the day of the funeral came. And so they're all in the church. And the pastor gets up to give the eulogy and to talk about the man who has died. And he said, whatever his name was, he said, he was awful. He wasn't generous and he had loads of money. He would manipulate things. And, you know, there weren't many worse people that you could know. This guy was just terrible. He said, but compared to his brother, he was a saint. So he fulfilled his end of the bargain. And I was kind of thinking about that story this week and thinking about, you know, love and all of that kind of stuff that I was speaking on. And just this thought came into my head that actually love should, no matter what, respect each other. When we love one another, we should respect one another. Love is respectful. I don't know if that was majorly respectful or not. Okay, just made me chuckle. But love should be respectful. And the word respect, if you look in the dictionary, means this, a condition of being esteemed or honored. The right or wrongs of it are irrelevant, but the brother in that story wanted respect for his brother who had died. He didn't quite get it, I don't think, but he wanted it. He wanted respect that maybe even wasn't due to him. But whatever our standing in life, we can only ever truly love when we respect someone. We can only ever truly love out of a respect. And I want to tell you a story this morning. In fact, could I just borrow one of the stools? Is that okay? If someone could just, can you get me that, Paul? I want to tell you a story this morning and all about love and all about this word. I think all about this word, respect. Respect is a bit of an old-fashioned word these days, isn't it? Okay, it's not something that we would, you know, when we went round last week and said, you know, what is love? You know, even Math, when he Googled love, I'm fine. Even Math, when he Googled love, never came up with that. Okay, and he was sat on the front row with his iPad Googling what I'd asked you about. That's why he came up with the really good answer. Okay, it wasn't him. All right, it was Google. Okay, so I want to tell you a story. And once upon a time, there was a young woman who fell in love and in due course married the man of her dreams. Ah, It's all soppy. Okay. They were happy. Life was good. Until one day, the man she married died. In fact, in the family that she married into, all the men in that immediate family died, and she was left with her sister-in-law and her mother-in-law. We're talking about respect this morning, so we're not going to have any mother-in-law jokes. Okay. When she married, she had left her people and her culture and joined her husband. So she now had a decision to make. Does she go home or does she stay and support her mother-in-law? Her sister-in-law decided to go home and so said her goodbyes and off she went. A young woman decided to stay with her mother-in-law and they moved back to her land where her family had originated. When they went back, they had nothing. So our girl found a job and it was there that her life would find its biggest turn yet. She found herself finding favor with the field owner because of her love for her mother-in-law. In due course, she found out that the man she found favor with was a relative of her late husband. And her mother-in-law came up with a plan to let him know that she would be interested in him. The field owner sees her respect and honor of a people that are not her own and agrees to marry her and buy all the property from her mother-in-law, thus ensuring that they will forever be taken care of. I love stories with a happy ending. I love stories that are really nice. And that story is a story out of the Bible and is about a woman called Ruth. It's about a woman who leaves everything that she knows to stay with her mother-in-law, whose name is Naomi. And it's a story of love and of the respect that comes from loving well, even when you're in sorrow, even when you're in pain. We can find a way to love really well. And what I want to do this morning is look at what happens when we find this kind of love. It's not the soppy, romantic kind of love that you see in all the movies. It's not that kind of, you know, that kind of love that gives you butterflies in your stomach. It's the solid choice of loving someone, whatever life throws. And you can't deny what Ruth went through, leaving her people, then losing her husband. She would have had every right to leave Naomi, but love compelled her to be different. And the love and respect that she had for Naomi caused her to make the tough decision she did and follow it up with how she lived for the rest of her life. Because the decision that Ruth made wasn't a decision about the next 2 weeks. It wasn't a decision about the next 2 years. It was the decision about the rest of her life. And what I want to look at this morning is what happens when we have this kind of love that brings esteem and honor to one another. Because I think that's the kind of way to live. I think that is the way that we love really well. So I just got 3 points this morning, okay? And 3 things that I gleaned from the story of Ruth. And the first one is this, that respectful love unites. Ruth united herself to her mother-in-law. Do you know what? Life had given her a chance for separation. It had given her a chance to go her own way. It had given her a chance to do her own thing and bring division. But she chose unity. She chose the harder road. She chose to stay where she was. She chose to stay with Naomi. And we're not told what kind of relationship they had. You know, you would hope it was a good one because like she stuck by her. But we're not told that they had this idyllic mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship. But what we are told is that she chose to respect her mother-in-law. She chose to stay with her. And sometimes God brings some relationships to an end, but that's usually the exception rather than the rule. But sometimes God does say, you know, let's part ways. But God very rarely says that. Because God loves unity and he loves that whole thing of we're uniting together. We're going to love and esteem and honor one another. And you may have experienced in here this morning some of those relationships that come to an end. I've experienced that. I've experienced the pain and the heartache of that. So sometimes that does happen. But when we have a love that esteems one another and respects one another, that's always the last thing. That's always, we never make a start point from, I'm going to leave. We never make a start point from, this is the end. That is always the very last thing to happen. And sometimes God says yes to that, and sometimes we have to work hard and he doesn't. But in this case, Ruth decided to stay with her. And it says this in the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, chapter 1, verse 16 and 17. It's one of the most famous verses from the book of Ruth. And it says this, but Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. She made a lifelong decision. It wasn't just about the next few years. She made a choice to stay rather than go. She made a choice to unite rather than divide. And by staying with Naomi, Ruth was actually possibly ruining any chance of a future, because in the natural and with the customs of that day, she wasn't likely to find someone else to marry. Now, we know that that wasn't the end for her. We know that things changed for her. But I want to say, when she made that decision, she made it going, do you know what? This may never happen for me, but that's okay, because I'm learning about your God, Naomi, and I'm learning about what he's like. And I just know that he is going to do something incredible in me. She clung to a people that she didn't descend from out of love and respect for Naomi. She was originally from a place called Moab, and Moab would have been very comfortable for her and would have been very nice. But she chose not to go back. She chose to stay with those that God had put her with. Sometimes respectful love puts aside comfort in favor of unity and righteousness. It puts aside those things in favor of something else. I want to read you some words from the book of 1 John near the end of the Bible. And I love these words. And it says this in 1 John 4, verses 7 to 21. It says, my beloved friends, let us continue to love each other, since love comes from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and experiences a relationship with God. The person who refuses to love doesn't know the first thing about God, because God is love. So you can't know him if you don't love. This is how God showed his love for us. God sent his only son into the world so that we might live through him. This is the kind of love we are talking about. Not that we once upon a time loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as a sacrifice to clear away our sin and the damage they've done to our relationship with God. My dear friends, if God loved us like this, we certainly ought to love each other. No one has seen God ever, but if we love one another, God dwells deeply within us and his love becomes complete in us, perfect love. This is how we know we're living steadily and deeply in him and he in us. He's given us life from his life, from his very own spirit. Also, we've seen for ourselves and continue to state openly that the Father sent his son as savior of the world. Everyone who confesses that Jesus is God's son participates continuously in an intimate relationship with God. We know it so well. We've embraced it heart and soul, this love that comes from God. God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. This way, love has the run of the house. I love those words. Becomes at home and mature in us so that we're free of worry on judgment day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ. There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment is not yet fully formed in love. We, though we are going to love, love and be loved. First we were loved, now we love. He loved us first. If anyone boasts, get this, I love the way the message puts this. If anyone boasts, I love God, and goes right on hating his brother or sister, thinking nothing of it, then he's a liar. If he won't love the person he can see, how can he love the God he can't see? The command we have from Christ is blunt. Loving God includes loving people. You've got to love both. How amazing. I mean, like, you know, I kind of read those and think, okay, the Bible, you know, sometimes we look at the Bible and we say, does God say this or does he say that? That is clear, black and white, you know, about loving one another. Okay. If he won't love a person he can see, how can he love God that he can't see? The command we have from Christ is blunt. loving God includes loving people. You can't love God and say you don't love people. And the respectful love that I'm talking about this morning is what will set us apart as Christ followers. It's what we need to carry. It's the kind of love that does all it can to bring unity, even when life is screaming something else. Ever had life scream something at you? And even when life is screaming something else, God's love brings us together. Because this is the reality. Hate and love can't coexist. You can't say, I love God, but I hate you. You can't say, I love God, but I'm not going to love that person. Those two things, they can't coexist. And we struggle sometimes, don't we? I don't know if you ever have. I know I have. We struggle sometimes with this whole thing of people and forgiveness. And, you know, forgiveness doesn't mean that what somebody did wasn't wrong. It just means that you're not going to allow it to have a hold over you anymore. Because for some of us in here, when we hear a message like this, you know, we hear the word forgiveness, we think it lets other people off the hook. That isn't what forgiveness is about. Forgiveness is about, you know, the person who has been hurt finding freedom. That's what it's about. I know for me, forgiveness has been about me. It's been not necessarily just been about the other person. In whatever situation that might be, it's been about me, because I can't say I love God, but I hate you, or I hate and or I don't like, or I will never love whoever it is. And for some of us, you know, that the pain of what we've been through is really, really hard. But I want to say this morning that this kind of love that I'm talking about, which is not the sloppy movie kind of love, it's the kind of love that is going to unite. God calls us to live in love with the other people who are around us. And you know what? When we live loving people, it will affect our words. It will affect our actions. It will affect where we go. It will affect what we do. I want that kind of love for me. I want to live in that kind of love. I want my words and my actions and my thoughts to be affected as I try and love people the way that God did. Every part of Ruth's life was affected by the love she had for Naomi. It affected her choices. It affected her decision making. It affected where she went and what she did. And I want to say this morning that God's love in us will affect every single part of us. So respectful love chooses unity. The second thing, and I loved looking at this last week, respectful love chooses redemption. Do you know what? Godly love will always redeem. It will always buy back. It will always heal. And it will always restore. And I love that about God. Because when I've been far from him, that's what he has done for me. The word redemption means to buy back. It means to bring back. It means to call back. And I love, we don't use those words a lot anymore in church, really, because we see them as words that no one understands. But when you redeem something, you buy it back. You redeem it. It's a little bit like when I used to bake for the cafe in church. I used to redeem my own cake at a great price. So like, you know, I'd bring the kids to the cafe, hoping that they'd go for someone else's cake. No, they'd go for the one that I made. So I would buy the ingredients, I would make the cake, I would donate it to the cafe, and then my kids would go and buy it back. They would redeem the cake that the cafe took from us, okay, and they would buy back the one that mum made. I'm like, no, go for Auntie Sue's brownies or go for something else, okay? Don't buy back what I've made. We've got an extra one at home. Like, I made an extra one so you could have it. Like, no, we're having your cake, mum. I mean, that shows something that they like my cake, but I have to pay for it twice in that way. And when you redeem something, you buy it back. And when Ruth stayed with Naomi and ended up working in a field of a man named Boaz, he was a relative of Ruth's late father-in-law. And so in the culture of the day, I mean, it's absolute, honestly, if you read through the book of Ruth, the customs of the day, I've just read it and laughed, actually. Like, he did a deal with this guy to buy back the land and buy Ruth. And he, like, we'd shake hands or we'd sign a contract. He gave him his sandal. That is what happened. So he took his sandal off and he gave him, I'm not quite sure how he walked home, okay, but he gave the guy his sandal, and that was a sign of, we have made a deal. And if you read through the book of Ruth, you know, Naomi was a bit of a fixer-upper, okay? Naomi was like, okay, Ruth, Boaz is part of our family. So he could buy back our stuff, right? And we could have a life. So we need to, when you go to work, let's just let Boaz know that you're interested. And nothing was about, like, it didn't sexualize anything or anything like that. It wasn't about that. It was about her letting Boaz know, actually, if you would buy back, if you would redeem for me and for my mother-in-law, I am up for that. I would like that to take place. And there were loads of things that happened in the book of Ruth, okay, so that Boaz would know that he could redeem. And the words kinsman redeemer are used in the book of Ruth. And basically, all that means is a male relative, or that's where we get our phrase, the next of kin, okay? A male relative who has the chance to buy the family's property and marry the widow to give her back honor and dignity and a chance to be looked after financially. So Boaz became this, what we call a kinsman redeemer. He bought back, he redeemed everything that death had stolen from Ruth and Naomi. I don't know about you, but that sounds like another account in the Bible to me. And there are certain parts of the Old Testament that teach us about what the New Testament is about. And this story is a picture of what Jesus Christ did for us. He bought back what death and sin stole from us. So Boaz bought back what death had stolen from Ruth and Naomi. It had stolen the property. It had taken the property away from it. They had lost security. They had lost esteem. They had lost honor. And Boaz bought back everything that death had taken from them. And if you read in the New Testament and you read the story of what Jesus Christ did on the cross, he bought back everything that had been taken from us through death. There's a story that I heard years ago, and it's a story about a school. And in this school, there was a lot of fighting that used to go on in the school. And what happened was that the head teacher said, anyone caught fighting, it was in the days where they had the cane, okay? We don't have that anymore, but in the days when they did, anyone caught fighting will be punished. And there was this kid, and he was quite a small kid, and he was bullied quite heavily. And one day he decided to fight back. And this took a lot of guts, and it took a lot of kind of strength in him. And he fought back those who were bullying him. And he got caught, okay, and he got hauled out in an assembly. And they said to him, you know, you did this. And we said that the punishment was that you would get the cane. And so that is what is going to happen. So in this place, this kid is absolutely terrified, absolutely terrified. And all of a sudden, further back the hall, back in the hall, this older kid stood up and he walked to the front of the stage. And he got up on the stage and the teacher says, you know, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to take his cane for him. Because actually, he hasn't really done anything wrong. He was fighting back, but I'm going to take the punishment for him. And the teacher turned around and says, you can't do that. We said if you're caught, then you get the cane. He said, yeah, you said if you get caught, you get punished, but you never said who had to take the punishment. And this kid took and stood there and he took the punishment from this younger kid. And he took the punishment because he knew that if this younger kid got it, it would crush him and it would do something so awful to him. It would be more than him just getting the cane. It would absolutely crush him. And so he stood and he took the punishment for him. He redeemed something that someone else had taken. He bought back and he said, I'll take the punishment. And you know what? That is exactly what Jesus Christ did for us. We deserve the punishment. We all mess up, all of us. Every single person in this room does things that are wrong. And you may grade some of that and you may say what one person does is worse than what another person does, but at the end of the day, it's all wrong. This week, I have done things that are wrong. This week, you have done things that are wrong. And this is what Jesus says. He says, yeah, we all deserve punishment, but actually, I'm going to take that. You're not going to have that because his love wants to honor and respect and redeem and buy back everything that the enemy steals from us. Love will always choose redemption. It will always choose to honor and to redeem and to buy back. And this morning, let's catch a little bit of the heart of God to your life and to mine. All of those things that sometimes feel stolen from us. This morning, God says, do you know what? I'm redeeming those things. I can remember standing and someone praying over me that God would redeem the years that the locusts had eaten. That sounds a bit of a weird thing to say, doesn't it? But it's in the Bible. And it's on about God giving back more than what has been taken from us. Love doesn't ignore the obstacles that we have in our lives to overcome, but it does overcome them in a right way. Do you know what? Nothing this morning will stop or separate the love of God to our lives. And as God's followers, we need to decide to have that same passion and that same strength and that same reason to love other people. Respectful love will always redeem. Always. Those people in your life where it's hard to love, do you know what? Respectful love, this kind of love, it's like I said, it's not the wishy-washy romantic type. It's a love that sinks deep into our soul and it redeems things for us. And then the last thing I want to talk about this morning, and then we're going to pray together, is simply this, that this kind of respectful love creates a future. You know, it began with Ruth's love to Naomi. And then the story turns and we see Boaz's love to Ruth. This love brought unity, redemption, and then brought a future, which was more than she could ever have foreseen. If you know anything about the Bible and you know anything about, the kind of way that the genealogy of Jesus works, you will see that Ruth is in the line of Christ. So Ruth and Boaz had a son called Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David. And where David was promised that the Messiah or the Savior would come in his family line. Ruth is in the family line of Jesus. This Moabite woman, who should never really have been in the family line of Jesus, was in the family line of Jesus. Why? Because her love for her mother-in-law just created her future. Her love superseded her race. It went beyond the natural and gave her the life of her dreams. Do you know what? Her love brought in a future that was beyond what she could do for herself. I don't know about you. I try and kind of create my future. I try and create, you know, where I'm going to go and what I'm going to do. And you have like the 5-year plan. Anyone ever done those? By the end of like day 3, it's all gone to pot, okay? You have like the plan of this is where I want my life to go. I can remember sitting down when I was in sixth form with like career people and they would say, okay, where's your life going to go? And sixth form, they only had one kind of way that my life could go. And I can remember like battling, you know, the kind of system, and they would sit down and they would thrust university prospectuses into my hand. And I knew that that was not the way that my life was going to go, but I would sit for hours as teachers went, and what about this uni? And what about this uni? And I would say to them, but that's not the way my life's going to go. You see, I had a plan. I had a plan of where my life was going to go. And for the first few years, my life went according to my plan. For the first few years, my life went exactly according to what I had said since I was 13 years old that I would do, when I would do it, and my life lived according to plan. And then I ended up getting a divorce, and my life all of a sudden didn't go according to the plan that I had for it. You know, our plan was to come, and we were going to spend, you know, 3 to 5 years here and then move on, and my plan didn't work. My plan was like scuppered. My plan that I'd had, okay, that I had written down, and it was written down in my journal, so it was going to work because it's my plan. And how many of you know our plans always work? And you know, plans that I'd had for my life and when I was going to become a mum and all of those things, they were all written down. I had a plan, and do you know what? The plan has not worked. If your plan did, the Lord bless you. But mine didn't. Life happened. Things were thrown at me that began to mess up the plan. Things were thrown at Ruth that began to mess up the plan. But she got the life of her dreams. Why? Because she loved in a way that God loves. She decided that she was going to love and let that take her somewhere. And this morning, I want to just really challenge us that when we just decide to live a life of love and let God bring the rest, it doesn't matter whether it's written down in our journal or written down somewhere as the plan of our life. It's going to be the best plan you could ever have. Because this is what God says, that his plan for your life are to bring you hope and a future. His plans are good over your life. When we choose love above all else, God honors and exalts. Not in a way that creates pride, but in a way that renews love and creates opportunity again. 8 years ago, I met, I think one of the most loving people I've ever known. And her name is Nina, and she was my little girl's foster mum. And throughout our introductions, which were happening this time 8 years ago, it's a very special time of year for us. Throughout the introductions with our little girl, we would spend a lot of time in Nina and Derek's home. And we'd be chatting to them, and it was, you know, we had a great time with them. We still go and visit them. We have a great relationship with them. And every day at 4 o'clock, life would kind of change a little bit for us. And it was all about Caitlin up to that point. And then their adopted son, they had been foster carers for around 30 years, had had over 300 children through their doors. And one of the children they had through their doors became very poorly when he was small. And as a result of that, had major disabilities. And every day about 4 o'clock, he would come home and he would come into the room where we were, because you just became part of the family for 2 weeks, basically, is what happened. He would come into the room where we were. He would pick up the Wii remotes and he would thrust them into our hands. And his favorite game to play was Wii bowling. And he couldn't really, or we didn't know all the ways that he communicated. Nina did, but we didn't. But he would come in, he would thrust them into, and it doesn't matter what we were doing. We could be playing with our new daughter. We could be doing whatever. But he would come in and the world would stop because the Wii went on and we would have to play bowling with him. Now, one thing you need to know about me is that I'm not very good at Wii bowling at all, which was brilliant until you get those fluky shots, okay, where you kind of get all the pins down. And whenever that happened, we learned his communication. He would go and stand at the side of the room and like in the corner, and he would give you that grumpy stare as if to say, how dare you, because you might beat me. He couldn't verbalize that, but he would say it. But he would stand there and you knew exactly what he was saying to you. And those 2 weeks we spent in their home, and we go back probably once, twice a year to see them and to give Caitlin that continuity with her foster carers. And we went back not long ago, and we were asking, you know, how is this boy doing? And they said, oh, he's not very good now. He's in bed all the time. The doctor said that he would only survive until he was about 10. And he is now, I think, probably nearly 20. But his, in her words, his quality of life to other people now is not great. But to us, he's still with us. And when I hear this lady talk about this boy who became her son, they took him in as their own when they knew all the additional needs that he had. They took him as their own. And when I listen to her talk about the children that have come through her house, when I listen to her talk about what she did as a foster carer, when I listen to her talk about, you know, and we know that when Caitlin wants to know about the first, you know, part of her life that we were not involved in, we know exactly where we're going to send her, because we know that this lady can tell her things that we can't. And I look at her and I see this kind of love. A love that just does. A love that honors and esteems every child that went through her home, every adoptive parent that went to her home. She honored, she esteemed, she gave something of herself to every single child that she looked after. That's the kind of love that I'm talking about. And you know, I see that in her, and as of yet, I'm praying, but as of yet, I don't know if she has a personal relationship with Jesus, and yet she finds the strength and ability to love like that. You know, as those of us who do have that relationship with God, we should love like that. A love that esteems and brings dignity and brings honor. This morning, I want to finish with this. What are those areas of your life where you need to choose this kind of love? It's a life-changing kind of love. It's not a feelings kind of love. It's a decision kind of love. Where do you need to add this respectful love to your life? A love that unites, redeems, and leaves a legacy and creates a future, not just for you, but for those around you. My parents were first-generation Christians. Their parents weren't Christians. They didn't bring them up in the church. My mum lost both of her parents by the age of 10 and was taken in by an aunt, an uncle of hers. They weren't Christians, but they lived in this little town in Lancashire. My mum found a church. My dad was brought up on a very rough estate in Halifax. And he found a church, and they both found God and then found one another. I thank God that actually they have created, not just for themselves, but for me and for my kids, a legacy and a future that we may never have known had they not have found God. Do you know what? It's our choice, what we do with that, me and my brother and sister. It's our choice where we go with that. But I thank God that they gave us a legacy and they created something that we could follow. What are you creating for others to follow this morning? If someone followed the way you loved, where would that take them?